Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, in was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, our weekly show for all things Nintendo on IGN. My panel this week are the illustrious Lily.
Hello.
The Brian.
Okay, yeah, I'll take it.
And the Zach.
The one and only.
We didn't get cool names.
No, nothing like that. Philip actually can't be here this week. He is on assignment covering
the Lambo. Yeah, we actually have some live satellite feed. I don't know if we want to run this.
We have that.
Philip is in New York City at the Lambo.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
This is awesome.
There's that man.
Oh, he's wearing new underpants.
Okay, so is that the piano?
No, this is the motorcycle.
Oh, that's the motorcycle. Okay. I should have figured that out. Right?
And he actually sent me a couple of text messages. He wanted to relay some information about his experience with Lava. There he is.
Aww. There's
the robot suit on.
So Philip is just having an awesome time in New York. He's the first person at IGN to go hands-on with the Lava. So I'm really excited.
Here comes my personal favorite. Let's see what this one is. Oh, he's doing a fish.
If you're listening to this show and you're not watching it on IGN or YouTube, which you really should do, imagine a grown man
playing with a robot,
cardboard strapped to his body pretending to fish.
But also he loves it. He loves that all that cardboard is strapped to him in the photos.
Oh, yeah?
I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what he had to say. I tried all of them, but we only built the RC car and the fishing rod. Those two are easy to put together, but most kids under 10 will definitely need help. The robot kit was by far the best one, and it actually works how they say it does. It's a lot of fun, but all of them sort of feel like glorified tech demos. He said the motorcycle game in particular feels like they ripped the assets out of Mario Kart 8, like it's a hacked version of it, but it's still fun.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And then my personal favorite quote, fishing is really fun and very satisfying when you catch a big fish. Now, I don't know if he's talking about the Labo fishing game or just fishing in general.
That's the IGN review of the concept of fishing.
Yeah, because I agree fishing is great when you catch a big fish.
I totally agree. Yeah.
But
I was like, somebody in the NVC group was like, I don't know if these things are going to have any longevity. And I was like, people have been playing piano for thousands of years.
Right.
At one time.
Yeah.
So it's nice that he was able to check in with us before the show. You know, we haven't had a chance to go, all of us haven't had a chance to go hands on, but it was cool that he was able to send us at least some initial impressions. I'm sure he'll have a big ride up coming up.
So that sort of reinforces, I think, some of the hopes, but also some of the fears I think some people had that these are tech demos, that they don't feel like full fledged games. And I think that's sort of like, offsets the worries there a little bit about the price, you know, for $70-$80 for some of these kits, to have just a series of like kind of Wii Play style minigames is.
People who complain about the price don't have kids. Like, I'm convinced. Like, I'm so used to higher price points for these do-it-yourself kits, right? PB crates and stuff. But no, I can see it. If you think they're just like little demos with cardboard and you're not into that kind of stuff, I can see how it's expensive.
Yeah. No, totally. I hope the final versions have a little more depth. That'd be cool.
Yeah. So
before we dive in, can we see that image of Philip on the motorcycle one more time?
Please.
Yeah, let's bring that. By the way, we have Barrett back as our producer this week. You know how he left the show.
There you go. Show us the motorcycle, Barrett.
Yeah,
nice.
There we go.
Can we make this the thumbnail for the episode this week? I think this is a
beautiful
good one. Look at the IGN microphone in the background.
We miss
it. It's just hanging out. That's beautiful. All right. So in prepping for the show, 3 days ago, I think I talked to Zach, and I'm like, yeah, it's going to be a slow show. Not a lot of topics. We'll talk about a lot of indie games. But maybe Nintendo will announce something as usual. And of course, there's now more news to get to.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they went a little nuts.
Yeah, they had a Twitter direct.
Yeah. And so the first big news was the announcement of Mario Kart on mobile.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Called Mario Kart Tour.
Yep.
Are you excited?
I am really excited about it. I am concerned that it's going to cost as much as Mario Run, which I think was $9.99.
Yeah.
But then again, Mario Kart on mobile sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And it sounds like right up my alley of mobile games to play.
I don't know. Maybe I'm old, but I'm definitely old. But I'm consistently surprised at the reaction to $9.99 being like a negative on the Apple Store. That's crazy, right? Like most games are a buck or two. But I played Mario
twice that much for Final Fantasy games
same
on mobile.
And I played Mario Run for probably 15-20 hours. Like I did everything there is to do that game. I got every coin. I went back for all the extra stuff they added. Animal Crossing is a game that I have tried to give money to, and it doesn't really need it or want it.
That's because Tom Nook's still got all my freaking bags of cash years of Animal Crossing.
I think I spent $7 on Animal Crossing, maybe 5, maybe 10 total, and I played that game for 20 hours as well. So if this game is $10 and I get 15-20 hours out of it, oh my god, like that's a fantastic deal.
You have a really good point, because I always worry that it's going to be like pay to play, and then you'll have like the $10 and then you'll have to pay more to get more like carts or more things. So I think I'm just skeptical.
I will say
I'm
with you. And I will say the thing that's kind of like frustrating about Nintendo's online mobile business strategy is that they are, and always have been for the last year or two since they've been doing this, completely vague on specifics in terms of release dates or windows. Yep. Like finding out about a video game is fun. Finding out about when a fiscal year ends is the opposite of fun.
That was the least consumer friendly tweet.
Yeah.
They basically said, you know, they gave you a fiscal year range.
Like, I don't care about your fiscal year.
For everyone, the fiscal year runs between April 2018 and March 2019. And so it was like you could feel they weren't ready to announce Mario Kart Tour. And we don't know any details. We don't even know what type of
more details are available in your father's business briefcase that you can look at.
But they were basically forced to announce this, but with the same language that they would be speaking to shareholders.
Yeah,
with.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they get themselves into a sticky situation if they say that it's coming in 2018 or coming this year because you know, February 1st, 2019. If that game is still not out and it's this year, people are going to be like, yo, where's that Mario Kart game we're talking about? Like, you said it would be out this year, and it's been a year. So I understand that it's not the sexiest sort of PR to say fiscal year 2019 or 2018, but I also think that it's sort of the move that they had to make.
Mm-hmm.
If they had to announce this now, which maybe you're absolutely right, maybe they just could have hung on to it until they had a better idea of the release window. But
We will get to their earnings report. Sounds boring. It's more exciting than that. I promise you. We'll get to their earnings soon. But they obviously made some good dough with their mobile games, right. And the investors are saying, "Hey, what's next?" Right?
Yeah.
They haven't talked about anything beyond Animal
Crossing.
Well,
it's weird because these earnings calls and investor shareholder meetings and stuff like that, they're a reminder that video games are a weird marriage of like art and business.
Yep.
And it is our job as big stupid kids to be like, "What toys are you making this year?" And then it's like their job to convey to shareholders, like, this is how rich you're going to be this fall.
Yeah.
Do you think this game will be like a traditional, like modern Mario Kart game, just with tilt controls, maybe auto gas and no brakes?
Do you think it'll be
top down or game or something?
Look at the auto steering controls they added for younger gamers in Mario Kart 8 when it came to Switch, right? Like that effectively became like a two button video game.
Yeah.
And I think that like having a lot of that and like a sort of management of items on tethered to one or two buttons would be totally cool. I don't think they'll do tilting or swiping or anything like that. My concern here is if they're going to get in the business model that a lot of iOS kart racing games do, which is basically like your car's tired. It needs gas, and if you give it some money, like Animal Crossing did a little bit of that, but again, they don't really know how to monetize those things where you shake a tree in Animal Crossing and it's like 2 hours from now, the pears will grow back, but you can pay it and they'll grow back quicker.
That goes back to my concern from before, which is like you pay $99.99 and then you have to pay because your car ran out of gas, or you have to pay because something broke down, or you need a new cart to play this, or whatever.
That's why I'd be okay with their business model always being sort of like incremental if you want it, but also flat fee if you want it. I'd be happy to pay $15-$20 for an online mobile Mario Kart if it means like I never have to pay for a banana or an item or a car tire ever.
It took them a while to get there with Mario Run with the expansion stuff, but the idea of paying $10 up front, having a game to run through and collect all the coins and finish all the levels, and then 6 months, 8 months down the road, or even a year, them dropping in a bunch of new stuff and being like, "Hey, remember those levels? Now there's all new challenges to have at." Like, that's fine.
But it's fine for you as a consumer who's used to traditional games and paying up front, and it wasn't fine for them from an earnings perspective. Fire Emblem did better, right? Yeah. That is the smaller franchise in the grand scheme.
You know, you got a lot of horses in that game. Mm-hmm.
That's
horses
right.
are expensive.
Let's talk a little bit more about their announcements, because they also, you were talking about paying for stuff online. They announced the launch of Nintendo Switch Online.
Right.
Their online service.
Mm-hmm.
And gave us a date for the first, the new date for the first time. It's September of this year is when Nintendo Switch Online will officially launch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I saw a lot of sort of backlash to this, because they haven't really justified why this is worth paying for yet. And B, because online is free and will be until then. So if you're playing Dark Souls with your friend, you're going to get charged starting September.
It's almost like we had the exact same conversation with Andrew Goldberg.
Well, yeah, no, it's true. But more importantly, and this is what no one's really paying attention to, is that in September, that means that Nintendo pretty much has to launch a giant online
they
game.
They have to deliver.
Yeah.
Here's my theory.
AB.
The theory that I have is that 2 weeks ago, over the weekend, they had a Super Smash Bros. Tournament in Oakland, and Nintendo versus Nintendo of America partnered with that competition to host it, and they had a 30 team Splatoon 2 battle. They also had like all of the Super Smash Bros. Were represented there, and Nintendo versus their Twitter for like competitive. They like tweeted about it. They were talking about it. So my theory is that they're going to release a big game with the Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah.
And my theory might be that they might have a Super Smash Bros. That's coming back. They might port the Wii U one into the Switch.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Something about this date reference a big game coming out. And I truly think that Super Smash Bros. Online is like their way of getting people to stay, because Splatoon 2 might have like a really big online scene. But I feel like a lot of people will just drop off.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to ride off of the old fumes of Splatoon by then. And also, I believe Super Smash Brothers for Wii U and 3DS launched in September when it initially launched in what, 2013, 2014?
Barrett, did you verify?
Because I know I was in Japan for TGS and we had just gotten our codes and we were waiting in line at Tokyo Disney Sea battling each other in Smash Brothers. Yeah. It was surreal. But I think this will be sort of like a mix of the Wii U and the 3DS content together in one place with maybe some new characters and stuff.
That'd be smart. I mean, like, it still feels weird when a major game launches in an off month like September rather than November or in March, right? Those are the targets. So I could see it being a re-release of a really popular game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. Or they might be soft launching it, right?
Yep.
Maybe they're launching the program. And just as a reminder, if you forgot, they said they'll be kind of like classic style, like 16-bit games with online modes that would be released on a monthly basis. And you would be paying either $20 a year, $4 a month, or $8 for 3 months. And
right.
So it's possible that they'll go back to their classics and have something in September too, and then releasing the heavy hitter in November.
Yeah, which, like, side note, is a third of the cost of what the competitors are selling.
Yeah,
for theirs.
That's dirt cheap for
online. It's really cheap. Like, I think what bums me out is there's no like definitive ownership with those games. Like, I don't want to rent games from Nintendo, especially like I don't want to rent Mario World. Like, I want to own it. I want that icon there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, regardless of when and how and what it launches with, like, I just want the Virtual Console. Like, I just want them to come out swinging with something that people have been talking about since the inception of the Switch. Like, like, in addition to this plan, like, I'm more than willing to pay a $20 entry fee if it means I have access to a library of back catalog. Like,
so what do you think? Next word on this at E3 or before?
Yes,
do you think E3 they'll let out what
sure.
online is before then or no?
No, I think E3. I think E3 for sure.
E3, I feel like E3 for them this year, they're going to come out swinging. And a lot of the things might be unexpected. We might get like dates for, you know, Metroid Prime 4 or something like that. I just think that it's
a dreamer.
Yeah,
I'm 26-year-old millennial dreamer.
I think that as we've seen at E3 from Nintendo in the past 2 years, you know, Zelda and then Mario. I think that they will frame their entire booth and presentation around whatever this launch title is with online. I'm assuming that it's going to be Smash. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was a new Smash that was like decked out in the booth.
Yep.
Or that their booth was decked out like Smash and that all the details come in that
right.
direct.
And the cool thing was, do you remember how many sort of pipelines from Smash Brothers led directly into Virtual Console?
Yeah.
Like, how many times?
That's
like,
that's right.
Like, you could actually effectively get demos of Virtual Console games through Smash Brothers, which is really cool. What sucks is that means none of us will get Virtual Console until September, right? Which is a very long time away.
At least we get to, you know, at least it might, like, the possibility is there rather than us still waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And Brian, you have a Super NES Classic, right?
I do.
You can get busy before then. The third announcement.
Brian, you can get busy before then.
The third announcement in this kind of shareholder reacts come Twitter feed, celebration was that Nintendo, super big surprise, Nintendo and Illumination have partnered on a Mario movie. So that's the studio behind Minions, the Minions movies, Despicable Me.
Yep.
What else? Sing,
The Secret Life of Pets.
Secret Life of Pets.
They're making, they did The Lorax. They're going to do The Grinch.
Yep.
Like a before his heart became small.
So kid
the Grinch prequel?
Yeah.
Kid focused fare, right? Responsible for kid focused fare, but many of them incredibly successful animated titles. And the whole deal is co-financed by Universal, right? Mm-hmm. We have the partnership with Universal Studios. So it kind of was a no-brainer that we'd see some movie property tying in with Universal as well. And it's co-produced by Miyamoto, the movie.
So Universal is co-financing it, but they also own Illumination Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and DreamWorks, but they focused in on Illumination Entertainment to run this. And I think that's a great idea because Illumination Entertainment has the animation and the look that fits perfectly with Mario. Like, a lot, it's stylistic and it's simplistic yet stylistic with their animation compared to like Disney or Pixar, which has their own type of way of looking.
Yeah. You're an animation fan, right? And I think when people heard Mario movie, they thought Pixar would be amazing, or, you know, Disney studio behind Wreck-It Ralph, like somebody with that experience. I saw a couple of negative voices following this confirmation, or even the original rumor, which I think the Wall Street Journal posted last year.
I think that anytime you get a beloved character in the mix with Minions, people are going to flip flip out a little bit.
You think that's
like,
it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because like when people think of Illumination Studios, they only think of their biggest franchise, and that's Despicable Me and those terrible Minions.
Yep.
But I think you got to look beyond that. Like Lorax is one of my favorite animated movies ever. Like mm-hmm. I think that's such a great contender, but nobody ever talks about that in the same breath of this as they're talking about
Marvel. You think they can do the franchise justice?
I believe yeah. so. I think that the fact that Miyamoto is co-producing, like people think that because you're a producer, you don't have a lot of say in what you do. Like people think of, oh, Steven Spielberg produced or executive produced Transformers and look how that happened. But a producer has so much more power than you think. Like they have right. more power than a director mm. does. So I think that because he's co-producing, he will oversee from pre-production, production, and post-production.
Yep.
And I don't think he's going to let go of, like, I don't think he's going to make his characters look
you
terrible.
Think Miyamoto's going to oversee post-production?
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine that there would be, like, I think of his role in this in the same way that he was an executive producer on Kingdom Battle, right?
Yeah.
In that, like, this is what Mario can and can't do in this medium.
Have you seen the Pikmin animated movies that he directed?
No.
Yeah. So those were...
I didn't even know that was a thing.
He's small.
Yeah, they're small short films that they launched on Wii U. I think you could get them also through Club Nintendo. They're definitely on YouTube right now. But yeah, Shigeru Miyamoto directed a bunch of like micro movies starring Pikmin. And yeah. they're all really cool and very sort of heady conceptually and sort of
yeah.
in the same Miyamoto way where he's like, I have an idea. And then this is the seven different ways we can build upon it.
Yeah, so, well, he also created Wii Music, so
yeah,
think about that.
Yeah.
The dude's not infallible.
It'll be interesting, though. I mean, like, with the will Mario talk a lot? And will that drive us crazy to hear Charles Martinet go, oh, now I'm going to do this, and how much
How much did the Minions talk?
A lot. Yeah, not,
right?
A lot. But,
they say nothing.
Yeah. I think... Yeah.
You know?
I think
they just kind of babble.
Well, there's that one in Despicable Me 3 when the one Minion has that crazy political rant.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very odd.
We've talked about it here on the show before, but I don't think he'll talk at all. Like I think he'll say
the usual stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, in Kingdom Battle, he talked a little bit, but not like enough to be like, whoa, like Mario, don't talk
about
it.
Yeah, no, he'll just mumble in racist stereotypes like he's been doing for 30 years. He'll be like, and I'll be like, yeah, that's cute.
You'll translate?
Where are we going to go for dinner? Mexico.
I hope it's an origin story and the tagline is Wahoo! Question mark.
Very nice.
I'm just excited to see.
Bad joke.
I'm just excited to see how it turns out. Like, I feel like a lot of people are so jaded by the 1993 Super Mario Bros. Movie that they don't want this to happen. They don't want Mario to get tortured.
I think they're jaded by the idea of video game movies in general.
Yeah, but
even Ratchet and Clank from a few years ago was bad.
Yeah.
There's a live action CG animated Sonic the Hedgehog movie coming out.
Yeah,
like, things are about to get weird.
But the one experiment with a big animation studio was Wreck-It Ralph was the closest to a video game movie that's animated in that style, and that was
good. That was like borderline parody, right? Like
right.
The way that they frame that movie, the thing that makes Wreck-It Ralph work is that it's not based on a property that has to abide by any certain rules. It just incorporates a lot of other video gamey type things into it. Like, this is a Mario.
Yeah.
Like,
but
Mario
will have
to do Mario stuff in order for it to be Mario.
But he didn't
film.
Do Mario things in Kingdom Battle. He had, like, some liberties. Like,
oh, you remember all those times that Mario used the gun?
Yeah. So I think that, like, we just have to think of it, like, with Ubisoft, where they had, like, a certain liberties to do things with Mario that he never did before.
Yeah.
So I think Illumination will have that ability to do that. It's just like how much
that's entirely what Miyamoto's role in this is going to be. I think that he's going to have script approval and he's going to be like, Mario can do this. He cannot do this.
Yeah.
Also,
after Detective Pikachu, though, I feel like there might be more freedom than we think.
Maybe,
Yeah.
Also, the good thing is with an animated movie, you don't get a like arguing husband and wife couple that go home and go like, hey, what if we edited it like this? What if we shot it like this? Like, this movie is going to be completely storyboarded out and approved every second because it's going to cost millions of dollars a second. It won't be like, you know, Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo getting drunk behind a car being like, yeah, I guess that's what a dinosaur looks like. Movie's a wreck.
Hey, so I want to get to this week's lead topic, but before that, just two quick news updates that I want to make sure Nintendo fans know about. One is Splatoon 2 still getting updated. We had a new weapons drop, the Rapid Blaster Deco.
Yep.
It's also, you mentioned it's hitting the competitive scene with more tournaments coming out.
Yep.
And then I think today, Arowana Mall was also added, right?
Yeah, which is a...
Marijuana Mall?
Yeah, yes, Marijuana Mall.
You gotta have a card to get in there, but it's worth it.
That level is legal now.
Yeah, it's a throwback to Splatoon, which I think is a lot it's a more interesting map, which mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will be excited about.
So you're going to play?
Yep.
Available Aren't every afternoon at 4:20.
Is Lily going to play Splatoon?
need more time. And then the second really interesting news
go to
item.
The marijuana mall.
Oh yeah, I gotta go shopping.
You could use some the marijuana.
It's just like like a
He's
relaxing.
Saying to up your style.
Oh yeah, it's okay now.
That's all this place all needs. Now. Is just me being really goofy and stupid on camera.
Like yeah, Brian.
Have you ever tried that, Brian?
I wore a fake mustache before the show today. Right, I don't need to go to the marijuana mall.
The other news item is Minecraft got the legendary skin pack 1 update to Switch. That sounds like a generic thing, but is actually pretty notable in that it includes Microsoft characters. So mm-hmm. Microsoft, who of course bought Minecraft and own the franchise and are distributing it still across multiple platforms.
This is so allowed, unsettling.
Yeah. And Nintendo allowed Master Chief, Banjo, Coltrane from Gears, right?
Yeah.
Explosion Man, the heroes from the Fable game. So you can actually play as Green Samus now here in the Mushroom Kingdom.
In Mushroom Kingdom.
Look at him attacking the Goomba.
I think more importantly, like Banjo and Kazooie are back on a Nintendo platform in the longest walk possible to get there. Like,
look at how
so
terrifying
bizarre.
This turtle is. Oh boy!
Oh man,
that is unsettling.
The turtle did something. It knows something.
But Banjo and Kazooie originating on Nintendo hardware, and then Rare buying them out or bringing them over to Microsoft, who bought out Rare.
Yeah.
And then doing Banjo Nuts and Bolts, and then a couple of like Banjo Pilot, and then what was it? Diddy Kong Racing 3DS had Banjo in it.
No.
So we got to see them there. Banjo also has that weird idle animation where like he'll pull out a Game Boy. So they're always like they're still friends. When I took a tour at Nintendo, you remember there. A couple years ago, they have a statue of Banjo and Kazooie in there. And mm-hmm. it's just cool to see that because he's not really one of their properties anymore. Yeah. But yeah, it's taken a while, but Banjo and Kazooie are back on Nintendo in Minecraft.
Are your pupils dilated?
Yeah. I'm high as hell.
Oh, I see that. Fresh in from Arowana Mall.
Hell yeah.
Here's Brian Altano.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It's gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Super Mario Odyssey, NBA 2K18, Fire Emblem Warriors, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day. So ask yourself, how many moons can you find in Super Mario Odyssey for 54 cents a day? Oh, and you don't even have to leave the house. The games come right to you. And hey, they rent movies too. Normally, a Gamefly trial lets you only check out one game at a time, but if you head to gamefly.com/voicechat, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today at gamefly.com/voicechat.
So now for our lead topic, earlier in the week, actually, Nintendo announced via their earnings, their system sales, their game sales, their top sellers across all the different platforms. And I think it's fair to say that Nintendo Switch is doing quite well out in the world.
If I may.
If you may.
You've written a strap here, Pear, that I think deserves a good read.
What is that? Can you do that for us?
I'd like for you to read this first sentence here after our lead topic.
Nintendo Switch is hot, hot, hot.
Correct.
'80s song.
In other words,
it is hot.
It's 857 billion yen hot. Not just the Switch, but Nintendo's total earnings.
That sounds like a child's fake number.
Yeah. It is 850,012 million.
What?
I don't. 857 billion. They do this in earnings reports. It's really annoying. They don't say billion. But that's just for the 9 months ending December 31st. So that's essentially from March, including the Switch launch, but not the first 3 months of the.
So they're
the
going
year.
Out of business.
That's seven.
That sucks.
$7.9 billion. 175% increase over 2016, and then in pure operating profit. So that's after taking out all the cost of development, the hardware, manufacturing, all that. Nintendo made $1.7 billion in operating profit for those 9 months.
But, Pear, I read on YouTube that Nintendo's going to go third party and Mario's going to be on the PlayStation.
Well, if they do, they got $1.7 billion to spend on game development. This is obviously good performance. The other guys aren't doing too shabby either, right? Mm-hmm. PlayStation and Xbox, especially PlayStation, is doing very well. But doesn't have as much falling down to the bottom line because their hardware cost is much, much higher.
Right.
So they make less on the machines they sell, but obviously they get a lot more on their licensing business.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll leave that that boring financial stuff behind in 1 second. But mobile business did 29 billion yen, and that includes Nintendo's share of Pokemon Go.
Oh, all Andrew.
Which is just 2 billion yen, you know, because that's run under the Pokemon company, and Nintendo, it's a subsidiary.
Subsidiary, yeah.
So that's $18 million. So,
wow.
Not quite as much, right? Once you break it down like this.
Right.
Mobile business, not small for them. They certainly didn't spend all this on development, but not a huge part of their business yet, right? 3% of their business. Super NES Classic hit 4 million units sold.
That's huge. Wow.
Which means there are actually many more out there, and the shortage is over, right?
It's nice to see this number because seeing this earlier and 4 million is such a baffling number in terms of SNES Classic to me, because we thought for sure that Reggie was just full of it when he's like, there will be more available.
Yeah.
But they obviously put their money where their mouth is because they've sold a ton of those units. So, mm-hmm.
And you know what else?
That true.
Yeah. You know what else was readily available after the initial shortage was the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. That's
right.
Yeah.
And I think if you think back to all the system launches and how frustrating the Wii situation was for so many months, I have to say Nintendo did a really nice job delivering stock. Maybe it was smart to launch in March and have like a slower ramp up where they would have more Switches available for Christmas.
Totally. Yeah. And people were crazy. People like feverish for this thing by the time. First of all, we had like a great game every single month last year. So by the time this thing hit and you could buy it, there was no reason not to get one.
Yeah.
So how many units did it sell since March? Do you know the number? The Nintendo Switch?
14.86 million.
Yeah, so just under 15 million units sold in 9 months, which you know, they initially said they wanted to sell what was their revised target was 14 million, so they blew past that.
A million?
Well, actually, they were going to say they wanted to sell 14 million by March of this year, and they already blew past it in just December alone.
That's insane.
What's notable about that is it's selling incredibly fast, and it surpassed the total lifetime sales of the Wii.
Yep.
In 9-10 months.
9 months.
9 months.
It passed the Wii U.
And that it's going to take down GameCube next, which is almost 20. Oh, my God. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
You think – I mean, come on.
So GameCube –
you think that's it for the Switch?
No, for sure. GameCube lifetime sales at 21.7 million.
Yeah. I mean, that's in the crosshairs now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean
– so possibly, probably.
If Nintendo can – get a couple of bangers on this system, first party, obviously, but then also when you've got support of things like, oh, you can go back and play Dark Souls on this. You can, like, these bigger third party games that people might have, people might have missed on other systems or previous generations. Like, yeah, I think that GameCube is well within their sights.
Also, we just saw and talked about Master Chief, and Halo is one of the most beloved classic franchises of all time.
Coming to Switch, 2019.
The Xbox only sold a few million units more than the GameCube did. Those two were neck and neck for ages until the GameCube dropped to $99 for a minute there and then kind of got a little spike.
And online games took off. Right?
Yeah. And so that means the Switch is going to outsell the original Xbox very soon, too. That's crazy. Like, this is going to get in the upper pantheon of best-selling consoles.
I'm just having flashbacks of like back in January when they announced this last year, and I went, oh boy, is this going to be another Wii U episode type of thing where it's not going to do well?
Or Vita, right?
Yeah.
It looks like a Vita.
And I remember like come E3 when I was working with you guys, and I was like, oh, I have to buy one.
Right.
Like, I have to buy one.
Well, if you look at our biggest concerns back then, and I'm sure you shared them, it was battery life, which turned out to be pretty good enough.
Yeah, decent,
third party support, which we got, and great, like, hard hitting first party games, which we got as well. So all of those things were sort of satiated, and now we're good.
Yeah. And
now my biggest problem with it is storage.
Do you think so? Yeah. You know, some of the other, console sales on the list. And by the way, the 3DS did really well last year as well. So it didn't get cannibalized by the Switch yet, which means Nintendo will continue to make games for it. 3DS is at 72 million units sold. So the biggest seller, of course, was the DS line before that, right? With 154 million sold because there were so many iterations and it was on the market for so long. Before that, the Game Boy with 118 million and the Wii with 101 million. So Nintendo, I think, is very hopeful that the Switch will perform as well as the Wii out there.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we have the quote here, but they said at some point last night that they sort of expect the Switch to surpass the average console life cycle of what that, I guess it's roughly around 5 years, right? Yeah. If you looked at the 3DS and stuff like that, that's actually petering into the, what, 6, 7, 8 year territory and will continue to. So I think as a dedicated handheld, once this thing is like $100, $150, and there's like Pokemon and Zelda and everything on it, this is going to sell like crazy for a very long time.
And if they iterate and you do get the DX version, the more powerful, the X version,
or the micro version,
or you get the micro, like there could be a lot of life left in this machine just going for a very long time, like the DS did before it.
Are you gonna buy tiny versions of all your favorite Joy-Cons?
Yeah, of course. I'm rocking the green Joy-Con this time. Here.
Those are gorgeous, by the way.
Yeah, so that's the Splatoon set comes with the raspberry and lime colors. Uh-huh. And so you got to buy the reverse color to get the green. But it's
so now you have double raspberries and double limes.
That's right.
All right. Yeah,
yeah. Another trip to the House of 1,000 Joy-Cons.
Yes, House of 1,000 Joy-Con. So top-selling software, Super Mario Odyssey is the top seller on Switch so far. With more than 9 million units sold.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So now, of course, before you say, oh my God, this is the biggest seller ever in Nintendo history, I just want to clarify that includes bundles, right? So if you buy a bundle unit, that number is in here. And the biggest bundle success, for Nintendo was Wii Sports. Wii Sports sold 82 million units. So obviously some aspirational goals there for the Wii era and how big mainstream titles can be. But,
and so Mario Kart outsold Zelda and Mario Odyssey outsold Zelda. Is that correct?
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold 7.3 million units. Outsold Breath of the Wild, which had 6.7 million unit Switch version only.
My girl, Rabbit Peach.
And there's Kingdom Battle, which is another million seller. The cool thing about Zelda is that when it launched near the Switch, the attach rate was actually higher than the Switch itself. If you guys remember, we covered that story in that people like me actually bought two copies of that game. I got it digitally, and I bought like the deluxe special edition thing.
Yeah.
So eventually that sort of slowed down, and Mario, with 2 months on the market, eclipsed that and became the best-selling game.
So I had a few people tweet at me in confusion that Mario Odyssey outsold Breath of the Wild. I think even with the Wii U sales rolled in, Super Mario Odyssey still did better, and that's not a surprise, guys. Like the top-selling franchises for Nintendo are actually Pokemon, Super Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, and Mario. And so Zelda has never really been at the top traditionally. Mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild is going to end up being the top-selling Zelda game of all time.
Yeah.
But Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I just want to point that out. 7.3 million units. That is a re-release of a Wii U game, which already sold 8.4 million units on the Wii U.
Right.
That same game. So they totally double dipped on it. And that compares to
such an insane percentage of that install base. Like, that's crazy.
On
Wii U, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But like, you know what that means.
75%.
That's such a huge attach rate.
Not that Nintendo needed that number to justify it, but like, they gotta be working on a new Mario Kart game beyond the mobile.
What if
game,
that right? is hand in hand with whatever they've got planned for September?
I'm curious.
A little early.
Does that number, for Mario Kart 8 also count for, bundles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, any of these numbers have the bundle.
You got a Mario Kart bundle, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You get a Mario Kart bundle.
I got my Mario Kart bundle came with a Pro Controller, Zelda, and Mario Kart 8.
Oh, right.
My Mario Kart bundle came with Splatoon. I couldn't figure it out why.
Right.
So, thank you for mentioning Splatoon. Splatoon 2 did just under 5 million units.
What?
That's on the strength of Japanese sales. Very popular over there.
Also, fun fact, the Splatoon 1 community is very lively, because I've been playing Splatoon, the first one, just going back to it, and I get I've been doing it because my friend doesn't own a Switch. I've been convincing he should, but every time I go and play a regular battle there, instantly I get a match.
Nice.
So people are still there.
And how does it feel good to go back to that one?
Really weird, but I love the stages. There are so many more stages, and the music from that. I really want them to bring back the music that was in Splatoon 1 into Splatoon 2.
You're tired of all four tracks in Splatoon already?
The four best songs ever made.
There are at least 16 songs, I think. I don't know.
Definitely not.
Those were some daggers shooting your way there.
I think it's the four songs they played four times each.
So, maybe. By the way, Splatoon 1 also sold 4.91 million copies, just like the Switch version, which means they converted every single user to the new one.
That's nuts.
One out of three Wii U owners owned Splatoon. That's nuts, man. Yeah,
but also think about that. What little time Splatoon 2 has been on the market to reach the same sales milestone as the Wii U version. So this stuff's flying off the shelves. 1-2 Switch, not quite as justified. 1.8 million. ARMS, 1.6 million units sold. That's a new franchise. Xenoblade Chronicles 2, it just came out in December, 1 million units. Just that month alone. So really, really good news. 3DS also did well with, you know, Mario Kart 7 topped 16 million units. Pokemon cleaning up everywhere, 16 million units, 13 million units. So Nintendo is alive and well and raking in the dough. Yeah.
It's nice to see Tamagotchi Life on this list.
Oh, yeah. You remember that one?
Yeah.
6 million units.
6 million units for Tamagotchi Life. That's awesome.
So before we head into the break, one last thing that was included in the sales announcements was the reaffirmation that Metroid still is listed as a TBA title. Mm-hmm. So we don't know a date yet, but Pokemon still had a 28 or later type date. So 2018. Yeah. What did I say?
28.
Yeah, well, it's back in time.
I might the year dilated. 28 was a great year for Nintendo. They announced Rock and Stick that year.
So,
great
I mean, like, having covered Nintendo for so long, I know 28 or later means later.
Right.
Yeah.
But the fact that they still think that they can pop this game into 2018 is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Because if that was their Christmas game, that would be freaking
that
humongous.
Would be insane.
That you know? Switch sale would go up so fast.
What if...
So excited for this fiscal year.
I just can't wait. Fiscal year.
Yes.
Love fiscal year.
So we'll keep an eye on these stories as they develop. Nintendo likes to trickle out sales information after their earnings call and
on
just kind of deep dive. Yeah, on Twitter. Keep an eye out on it. But suffice it to say, the Switch is not going away. It's a success. Mm-hmm. Hopefully more third parties will jump on board and support this thing.
It's actually great news for us as, like, I don't know, weird nerds for little numbers and things like that. Yeah. I've always been fascinated by NPD. Always. Like, it's just one of my favorite things. When a console's doing really well, and the games are doing really well, you get so much information. And you look at other times, like I know Sony specifically during the PS3 era, they were like, we shipped so many, we sent all these things to the store. And I was like, do people buy them? They're like, oh, well, they will, don't worry.
That's the issue when you're trying to compare cross-platforms, right? Like Xbox will not release console sales.
Yeah, Nintendo we have no idea this gen.
Sony does sell in, not sell through. So it's very difficult to compare them, but it looks like everybody's doing pretty well. Yep. And we like it that way.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Lily, for joining us this week.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
When we come back after the break, we'll have Chloe Rad joining us. She's our expert on indie games, and there are a ton of new games coming out on the Switch that we want to talk about. So see you in a sec.
Bye.
Welcome back to NVC, the second half of the show. If you didn't watch the first half, please go back, rewind.
How is that even?
It's possible.
Start videos
it's
in the
possible.
Middle?
Right. Sometimes I like to go to my favorite YouTube channels and I'll just click on a random video and just start right in the middle just to see if I can catch up.
I like to walk in the movie theaters right like halfway through.
They might be catching this on the radio. You never know. Mm-hmm. You know, like tune in or something. Like it might be in the middle. You never know. Yeah, that happens.
We're not on the radio.
All right. Terrestrial radio doesn't exist.
I want to introduce you guys to Chloe Rand. Chloe has not been on NVC before.
Hello, I've never been on NVC. Hi, I'm Chloe.
But you've worked at IGN for how long?
Oh God,
Like 34 years?
5 years at this point, I think.
Jesus Christ,
5 years?
Okay,
I think counting my time as a freelancer, it's been a while.
So my God.
The reason for that is Chloe plays a ton of games on PC, and she's the person I always go to when I want to know what indie games to buy next because she seems to have played all of them. And guess what happened? Now all these games are coming to Switch. Sometimes day one, sometimes like 2 years later.
Yeah. The Switch is actually my favorite console right now.
That
which
rules.
Is, as a PC gamer, like, I am very happy to have a way to play indie games now on the go.
Did you find yourself like just slowly sort of being like, hey, I'm playing more games on Switch and less on Steam? Even though I feel like a lot of them come to Steam.
It's a good mix. Yeah. I mean, I still love my PC, but like there are some games that just work so well on the Switch, like Stardew Valley. I sunk like 50 hours into that just on the Switch.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, like there's like things that I know you reviewed Thumper.
Yes.
When it came out.
Right.
And then that came to Switch, and I know that you were playing that all
Thumper
over again on Switch.
Is
and
like ideal on Switch, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Great. So you're a PC person. Like, do you find yourself like skipping stuff on PC for Switch, or is there like a big discrepancy in release dates? Are you like looking at stuff on Steam and being like, oh, I'll play that when it comes to Switch, or?
It depends, really. Honestly, at this point, it's become this thing where like there's all these great games coming to Switch that release on PC first, and this is my opportunity to go back and replay them again.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about just quickly about what's out this month. You know, we're officially in February, so we've got Bayonetta 2 coming out for $50 and Bayonetta 1 for $30.
Is there not a Bayonetta collection?
Yeah,
there's Japanese exclusive right now to get them physically. Yeah. If you want 1 and 2 physically, you have
so to buy them both digitally, I got to spend $80?
I think so, yeah. Which sucks because I feel what did they do with the last time they realized
downloaded one title and got one physical.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
So I think it's the same with this one. Mm-hmm. But so Bayonetta is coming out, obviously a really highly regarded game at IGN, and once we get a playable of that, we're going to talk a ton about it.
Yeah.
Payday 2, the kind of mysterious game that disappeared and came back, is actually coming out this month as well for $50.
Fe
is coming.
Oh, that's finally coming.
Out for $20. There. I thought. There's Fe. That's coming out.
It's a really pretty game.
And then Dragon Quest Builders. We talked a little bit about it. Is out on the 9th this month. That's another bigger game.
Dragon Quest Builders. I'm not a Minecraft guy. And I'm not a Dragon Quest guy. So on paper, this should not be a game that I'm interested in. A few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, they put the demo of this on Switch, and I was sick, and I spent an entire Saturday just playing the demo. Played through the end of the demo, and then just kept building and kept mining, and this game is awesome and funny and kind of silly, and I'm really excited for it to release and really dig into it because it feels like a 16-bit Zelda game with ActRaiser building mechanics.
That sounds like an awesome demo that you were able to get that much mileage out of.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, it gets to a certain point where you can open up portals and it'll send you to like another land to get different resources. But in the demo, it's just like, well, you can't go there. This is the end of the demo.
Right.
But feel free to poke around here if you still want to. So I did, and I discovered a bunch of stuff and like caves and stuff. It was awesome. But I also sunk like all in probably like 6 or 7 hours into the demo. And I wonder if there's an unlock screen in the demo itself that will carry my save over, that would be ideal. I'd rather not have to play those 6 hours again, but
for sure.
I will willingly if that's the case.
Did the performance of the Switch version bug you a little bit? I mean, it runs a little slower than the original. Like a little
I have no metric versus the PS4 or Xbox versions of it. Philip also spent a ton of time. Do we have a photo of Philip that we can run? Is there any kind of...
Do you think we have a photo of Philip?
Is there any kind of thing that we can... Like, what's Philip up to? Do you know?
Well, I think at this point, Barrett is, like, shuffling through all his papers.
There he is. There's that man.
There's
all right. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Philip has also put a bunch of time into Dragon Quest, and he didn't mention any performance hits either.
Okay.
Like, it didn't seem to bother him, so...
Good. Mm-hmm. A couple of smaller games were announced. Atui, you know, we had the founder on a couple of weeks ago, so look that up. Atui has a soccer game coming out. He actually showed that to us a little bit. It's like this kind of cute, arcadey soccer game with what looked like Minecraft characters, like little
very
blocky guys, right?
Voxel-y. Yep. Yeah, it's cool.
So we'll let you know more about that once we get to play it more. This is The Police 2 got announced.
Mm-hmm.
You guys not excited about that?
This is The Police 1 is terrifying enough for me. So
I play the original one.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting game. It's just not really for me.
Gotcha.
It's kind of like point and clicky adventure-y.
Is it not too close to home? Like, you have a lot of experience with the police, obviously.
Those are point and shooty adventures.
Yeah,
I've had some run-ins with the real police, so it does bring back some very tragic memories of running.
And then Bendy and the Ink Machine, you also have some experience with that. Bendy, did you know
this is
this?
A very sexual episode.
So I'm actually waiting for all of Bendy to come out. It's been released episodically, but it's like a...
that doesn't sound great.
What?
We're waiting for all of Bendy.
Yeah.
Is that what I said?
I don't know.
That's fine. Yeah, it's like a horror game. First person, I think you play like an animator and he's like haunted by memories of his old animations or something. It's got that like old 30s like Cuphead.
Oh, wow.
The style is really cool. It's like
old
animated.
Like old-timey cartoons, awesome. Scary. Yeah.
And so it was episodic and...
It's episodic.
Okay.
I think it should be concluding this year, but I could be wrong.
So I guess the Switch version, will it be everything at like a sort of a collection, I hope?
Oh, that's actually a good question.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Well, I'm assuming they're not going to restart it now. It's kind of tough to build buzz for episodic games that late.
Well, and we've also seen a lot of episodic games coming to the Switch as full packages. Like we're going to see Kentucky Route Zero come as all
I'm
one
so
thing.
Excited
all
about
the Telltale stuff.
All the Telltale stuff comes at once. Yeah.
But yeah, don't sleep on this one. It actually looks really cool. I haven't played it yet either, but it has a terrible name, obviously. So the other big release that I think most of us are still playing is Celeste. I think you finished
before,
it, didn't you?
I beat Celeste, but I'm still playing it. Okay. I've
are you doing
like
all the
B-sides 30 hours
stuff?
Into the game. I'm doing the B-sides. We're going to get all the strawberries. Yep. And we kind of have like this mini office tournament going. We're trying to speed run chapter one as fast as we can. And I think the current best time right now is a minute 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
I saw someone speed run the entire game at like 43 minutes.
40 minutes. Or something. 40 minutes? Yeah. Yeah.
And it's been out for like a week and a half.
Yeah. That guy beat his own world record, I think, like twice in a row. And I think he nailed like a minute 20 for chapter one.
Oh, my
because
God.
Because they do this like really cool like super jump that I'm actually not quite sure how you do it, but it just lets you fly across
the
pool.
Tom Marks, who was on the show last week, was talking about this like hidden super jump that he discovered and was talking about it to Dornbush, who was also on the show last week to talk about Celeste. And the two of them talking about it, it was like the nerdiest thing I've ever seen. Like, oh my God, can you believe this jump? It was great.
And you can bounce off the edge of spike strips and weird stuff like that, right?
Oh, that's just like that pixel perfect. Like,
yeah.
Tom recorded it by accident in his review. If you go to his review on IGN.com, there's a GIF of him doing this super jump. Sort of by accident. And that's how he discovered it. He was like, it's such a perfect rhythm thing where it's as soon as you touch a wall, you have to hit the jump button again and you'll bounce up higher.
I think what it is, it's like, it's sort of like the wall jump mechanic, but on a flat surface.
Right.
Is it intentional?
I believe it is. And I actually think the creator gave a speedrunner like a heads up that this existed.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because the game, Celeste was based on like that like Pico 8,
right?
You know, like kind of a super retro-y game that already had a speedrunning community, so they were ready for stuff like this.
Yeah, if you want to see Pico 8, it's actually in Celeste.
You can find the original.
We talked sort of at length about Celeste last week, and Tom was on talking about why he gave it a 10 out of 10 masterpiece score. And he and I had several long conversations leading up to the episode and his ultimate decision to give it a 10, where I didn't really get why he was so adamant about it being, this masterpiece score. Woo, baby. I put a lot more time into it in this last week, and I love that game.
So
I am fully on board with that decision. Like, it is, if you own a Switch, you owe it to yourself to play this game. It is fantastic.
So, and a lot of people obviously believe that message because I've seen it at the number one bestseller position. Mm-hmm. Every day I check the eShop, Celeste is right up there. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to see this game and, SteamWorld Dig 2, some of those games, it's really paying off for those devs to put day one on the Switch.
Yeah, that's huge.
Super One More Jump also came out last week. You're playing that, right?
Yeah, so I really dig this game. It's a $7 sort of kind of puzzly platformer. And after playing Celeste, I was like, I'm really good on tough as nails platformers, but it does that really smart thing where it's sort of like getting through levels is easy, getting all three coins is more difficult.
Yep.
What's really cool about this game is it has like dozens of different character skins and also completely different graphic overlays. They worked with a bunch of artists from Twitter to redesign basically the entire layout of the game.
Neat.
And reskin it. So you can play in like very simplistic NES graphics, or you can play in something that looks like the walls in Super Castlevania or Abadox or something.
Yeah, if you want to know what it looks like, we don't have any footage here, but it's like, the stages are more confined, your character auto runs and you have to hit the jumps at the right times, and it plays with gravity. Like you jump around the corner and you have to get these little coins on the way until you get to the exit. It's one of those games where like dying is okay because you can instantly retry. Just like Celeste. But even a little quicker. Like the levels are not as involved, at least in the beginning.
It almost feels like as they get later, it feels like sort of memorizing roller coasters, but with some like mild Mario Odyssey physics where you'll jump and sort of swing through the air over the gravity and land on the other side. And timing those jumps right is difficult, but you also, the levels can sort of loop. So it doesn't really play like some like kind of cheap iOS endless runner game.
Yep.
I really dig this game. $7. Seriously, it's like you can't lose with this thing.
So those have been some of the recent releases. Now this week and even today as you're watching it, a whole bunch of games came out. We should probably warn you of two, like Tennis actually came out last week as well, right?
Yeah.
You play that, you don't like that one?
I'm gonna say straight up right now, this is the worst game I've played on Switch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, tennis is trash.
Okay, so don't play tennis. Don't play tennis. Island Flight Simulator also came out. That actually came out on Wii U, I think like 2016.
Oh.
Also not a fantastic game. I would stay away from that one.
I was like, this is going to be our pilot. Pilot Wings, Pear.
So sometimes it's telling when in the eShop something doesn't have a video.
That's a good point.
Like it looks a little bit like Pilot Wings, but it's a very kind of limited and dated feeling flight sim and
like Pilot
sim.
Wings.
You don't do a lot of simmy stuff. I would stay awake. But a bunch of things came out that are actually much better, including SteamWorld Dig 1.
Mm-hmm.
So this came out, as you're watching it, it's out on the eShop. Everybody play SteamWorld Dig 2?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you would love it.
Yeah, I know you guys like it a lot.
Yeah.
So one is less good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fair to say, right?
Of course, fewer good.
It's fewer good.
Yeah.
It obviously came out way before then. It's a little bit less of a game.
Yeah.
It's a smaller game, but if you love the second one, you're gonna like this one too.
Yeah,
it's,
I really like this game. Yeah. I haven't gone back to it after playing the last one, but this is just a really smart sort of take on the Dig Dug / Metroidvania genres, and it's just really cool. And it's got these sort of mild RPG elements where like leveling up your weapons and stuff like that helps you go deeper and deeper and explore different areas. It's just a smaller, more compact game than 2 is.
Do you need to play the first one and play the second?
No, there's no.
I've not played the first one, and the second one was one of my top 5 games last year.
So the second one essentially starts with the main character from this game is missing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so that's the quest.
Oh, that's cool.
If you played the second one and you 100% of it like I did and you felt like a little bummed out and you haven't played the first one, just go back because it feels sort of like a map pack.
Or play SteamWorld Heist, which is also very good.
Yeah.
Very different game.
Very, very
SteamWorld Heist, a little bit more like a Worms tactical game with like aiming shots and ricocheting off bullets.
I'm having a good time with that.
Both of those games are, I feel like, great.
Yeah, and apparently Image and Form have a whole bunch of other games coming to the platform.
So. I know I've plugged these guys before, but the Retronauts podcast had an interview with, what's his name? I always butcher it, from Image and Form.
Brian Surrogate.
Where he talks about the company's history, and it is super fascinating. When you're done here, go listen to that episode. It's just really interesting insight and like what it's like to be an indie developer. So
Brian, we hope to have Brian on NVC, hopefully during the Game Developers Conference. He's we've tried to make it happen a couple of times and just
for like years
out,
now.
But he's coming to San Francisco that week, so look forward to hearing from him directly. Her Majesty's Spiffing came out. It's like some weird adventure game, with British humor.
British humor, yeah.
I definitely read this.
It's hard to tell like what kind of game it is from the trailer,
right?
Yeah.
But it looks like it could be fun.
I thought it was like that Oser Insult Simulator game. I keep getting those two confused.
I definitely read this as Her Majesty's Spliffing and thought that she had taken a trip to the Arowana Mall.
There are a couple of game titles where you have to watch out that you pronounce them correctly, including Shiftlinks. Mind the F. That's Shiftlinks Enhanced, Enhanced Edition. That's actually, it's a really nice looking game from a Norwegian developer called Rock Pocket, and you can play co-op. So, it's got weird, strange rolling characters. You'd like it.
Shiftlings.
Yep. Take a look. I'm looking forward to playing that one. It's not my pick of the week, but I dig it. Skyforce Reloaded also came out. That's like a sci-fi shmup, like a, shooter, 2D sci-fi game by Infinite Dreams. Dundara came out.
Dundara looks really cool. I think it's going to be one to watch. Yeah,
Tom Marks was playing this game, and it's a Metroidvania that has this weird sort of like hookshot angle system.
Yeah,
where it's getting
like
around the environment's like really
like a Bionic
they're like
Commando?
Gravity
kind of, but
puzzles.
Very, much more diagonal, I would say. Yeah.
Also, fun fact: the game is made by a Brazilian studio named Long Hat House, I think.
Yeah.
And, the character is actually based on a real like Afro-Brazilian warrior who like
super
fought
cool.
slavery.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But it's like a sci-fi game, right?
Yeah.
But there's that historical context there, I guess. It's like a retelling.
That's awesome.
And it's got, it has the very popular retro kind of styled graphics, but has some really cool stuff happening with gravity.
Yeah.
And how you navigate through the environment.
And that's, the name of this game is Dundara, right?
Dundara. So look that up. It's just $12 and it's out on the 6th of February, so a little later than
totally going to check that out.
Frederick 2, Evil Strikes Back, 3D Mini Golf, The Men of Yoshiwara, Kikuya, Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is billed as an RPG but is a rhythm game.
That's right.
Crypt of the Necrodancer is like it's like a turn-based roguelike, but you move to the rhythm. Yeah. And
weird.
Yeah, it has music by Danny Baranowski, who did the soundtracks for Super Meat Boy and Binding of Isaac.
Awesome.
So the music is like great.
So the first time I ever saw Crypt of the Necrodancer was at maybe GDC. And I want to say they had it hooked up to like a DDR pad.
Yes.
Yeah, which was super cool. Yeah.
So like rattling these off. I mean, there's some gems hidden in here. ACA Neo Geo Samurai Shodown 2, Eternal Blade, Mad Carnage, which is like for $5, it's this weird isometric Mad Max.
Mad Carnage sounds like a white rapper.
Yes. Mad Carnage.
It is a white rapper.
But it's like, but there's so much variety in the genres here. Not all of these games are amazing, but some good stuff coming out here.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into our next big topic here, there was another February game that we left off the list that I want to make sure that we point out. Owlboy. February 13th, Owlboy is coming to Switch. Long-awaited Metroidvania. This man is an owl. He's also a boy.
Yeah, that's right.
You reviewed this first, right?
I reviewed Owlboy, 2 years ago, actually, I think.
Oh, my God. That was 2 years ago? Yeah.
Did you say February 31st? This is like
February 13th.
Oh, I thought it was a leap year double dash.
What I actually said was February 13th, 28.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Very nice. So, Chloe, tell us about Owlboy and like why it would work on Switch.
I'll definitely be back on here probably to talk about that once
for sure,
where people can play it.
No, sorry, this is your only shot. Yeah, so let's have
it. My one shot. Okay.
Ruined.
It's I don't know. I give it such a high score. It's such a good game. It's been so long. Like, I'm really excited to get back to it. And I'm really excited also for like more people to actually play it, because I feel like you release a game just on PC and like, like when it comes to indie games, everyone's going to play it if it comes to Switch now.
Mm, yeah.
It's just got like a really heartwarming story. It's a very simple game. Like, the action's not super complex. It's not super deep, but like, I think that actually makes it a better fit for the Switch.
Right.
Kind of like kick back and like enjoy, this sort of like light Metroidvania adventure.
And is it like pixel art?
It's pixel art. It is so beautiful.
Because I remember you playing, and I'm getting like very warm flashbacks of seeing her. Because we sit right next to each other, and occasionally I'll just peer over and be like, "What's that?"
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then you'll get to like totally
it looks
explain
so good
to me
on the music.
Something that
awesome.
I need to be playing years from now.
So Chloe Rad will return to talk about Owlboy. But our pick of the week is actually a little game called Night in the Woods, out on the 1st of February.
Woods.
So by the time you watch this or listen to this, and you know, it takes a great game to beat Steamroll Dig for the top position of releases this week. Did you review it?
I did review Night in the Woods last year when it came out on PC and consoles.
Okay.
But it is finally coming to Switch, and I'm so excited. I've been playing it, actually, for the last 2 days, and it runs so well on the Switch. Like, it's one of those games where I'm like, this is, like, probably my ideal way to play it. Because it's such a cozy feeling game in a lot of ways, but...
You just said, F the cops, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Also, I like this picture-in-picture if you're watching a video version, because it looks like a cartoon version of whoever's talking in the corner. It's like two characters talking to each other.
So, okay.
So I
want to
get into
this yet. I don't get it. What is going on?
So what I love about Night in the Woods is kind of like what surprised me about it the most. It's, you expect something very different going into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a very cute-looking game. Like, you play this like cartoon cat girl. Everyone's like cute animals. You get that like kind of young adult vibe from it. And there's a lot of like... I think the young adult genre has kind of found a home in like small, like narrative driven adventure games like this. But I
and
feel
Oxenfree
like
and stuff.
Oxenfree mm-hmm. and Life is Strange.
Point.
And like, I don't want to hate on any one specific game, but like, I always feel like so much young adult fiction in games is like very superficial and kind of like they want to get super deep with characters, and they kind of like fail to do it in a way that really connects with me. What you get with Night in the Woods is this like startlingly sad story about like personal and economic stagnation.
Oh no.
It's not just like a cute, quirky, you know, story about like a bunch of teens. It's like, you follow this like girl, her name's May. She drops out of college. She comes back to her old, town called Possum Springs. It's sort of this like Midwestern,
You grew up there.
Possum Springs in the Midwest, my home.
It's like this rural Midwestern town, and it's like falling apart. Like business, you know, stores are going out of business. Big corporations are taking over their like local grocery stores. Factories are shuttering, and everything's just kind of falling apart.
Well,
and
they do like, coming from a small town that has been experiencing this kind of thing in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. Like, they do a really great job of explaining like why it's happening to this town, mm-hmm. and like what it's doing to the people that have been there at, you know, were there when this town was like a prospering place, and now it's this sort of shell.
Like, and I love this like dual story it sort of tells too, because it does follow May and her sort of personal journey. May is like a total jerk. Like, she is such an immature brat. She comes home, you know, there's this one line, I don't want to spoil too much, but there's this one line where she just threw a total fit in front of a bunch of her friends. And her friend kind of brings her home from this party that ended up being this big disaster. And, you know, she's like, you need to grow up, May. And May is like, I'm 2 months older than you. And she's like, yeah, well, you went off to college and stayed the same, you know, and I had to grow up. Like, I had to stay here and grow up. All of her friends have jobs. And I love that they're able to, like, paint this character that I just hated, but also, like, related to so hard and, like, wanted to see grow, you know?
That's awesome.
Well, I think it's so hard to do flawed characters like that, and I think Night in the Woods just nails that. And it does, again, what I was getting to earlier was, like, it does this dual story where it's, like, this tale of, like, a bunch of young adults trying to find themselves and in this, like, it's very, like, these millennial anxieties, you know, it's very like relevant to now.
And I think what's so cool is that it does have this sort of like wonderfully twee art direction. Mm-hmm. And you see so many things on Nintendo Switch that look sort of like these charming retro puzzle platformers. And this one just gets right, like it just kind of guts you differently than the other ones ever will.
And that's why it's so startling too, when like in the backdrop of, you know, May's adventures, you'll pass like a group of adults being like, how do we get businesses to come back here? Like, what do we do? And there's this kind of like every day you come into the town and there's this one character standing outside this like call center who's like, I need to quit. Like, I can't, you know, keep like crying in the back room every day. Like, my, this job sucks and it's gutting me and I need to move on. And I don't know. It's just, it's very raw and it's not what you would expect from a game that looks this cute.
Right. So is the gameplay, it's mostly exploration and talking to characters?
Yeah. So it's like, it actually is a little more open-ended than most people would think looking at it, because games like this get that whole walking sim, you know, label, which I hate. But, yeah, you go out every day and you kind of have your routine. You get to decide like who you want to spend time with. What like side stories you want to take on.
There's a time limit like in a Persona game or
there's,
something?
There's actually no time limit.
Okay.
It's mostly just like these sort of there's like a handful of events that you can do on any given day, and it's just kind of you finding those and then you actually doing them. And then from there, like once you do one thing for the day, like if you hang out with your friend Greg at the, you know, his snack place he works at, or like you go to dinner with your friend B, then after that it's like the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's yeah. There's a central mystery also. There's some kind of supernatural stuff, some crimey stuff.
Crimey,
yeah, there's a lot of crimes. It's a good game.
And it's $20, right?
Good question.
It's $20.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Everyone's
and
got
it's totally
cheat
worth
sheets.
It. Yeah, the game is about...
That's the central mystery that Chloe was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much is this game?
And it's about 10 to 20 hours long, depending on how much you want to do.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
And in December... Also, they added this like big free content update that the Switch version comes packaged with.
Oh, nice.
So, there's just more characters, more things to do. And they added the two standalone games the developers released before the game came out. So, you're getting a lot on the Switch.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, looking forward to this one. So, that's out. So,
yeah, thanks, Chloe.
The moment we're done with this, we can start downloading. Yeah, thank you so much for the overview. I mean, just again, like, I always go into the week thinking, oh, there's nothing coming out. And then you take a look at the eShop and you're like, oh God, that's out.
Mm-hmm.
Where did this come from? And actually Nintendo keeps on adding titles too. Like if you look at the Switch, the website that they have up, it shows you upcoming games and there'll be like six. And then a week later, suddenly there's like 12.
Yeah. And their press release blast, which you should sign up for because it comes every Thursday morning. I believe it's like 6 or 7 a.m. Pacific time here.
Yep.
It's like a cool thing to wake up to on Thursday morning because it's just like, oh, here's 20 things I didn't know were happening today.
So much stuff. So before we bid you farewell, I wanted to get to some of the to at least one of our question block questions this week. This one is from Monty. Monty says, "What's up, NVC crew? Monty here, longtime fan, first time writing in during the Musin era."
That's Philip Musin. Do we have any photos of Philip that we can show? Do we have anything going
on? I'm going to keep on reading while we do that. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on the future of 2D Zelda on Switch. Of course, I'm dying to play whatever Nintendo's follow-up to Breath of the Wild is, whether it be a smaller Majora's Mask-style adventure using the Breath of the Wild engine or something entirely new. That said, I don't want to see 2D Zeldas go away. A Link Between Worlds was one of my favorite Zelda games since Wind Waker, and I'm equally excited to play another 2D Zelda in that fashion. So he goes on to, ask about whether it's difficult because Nintendo can't justify a $60 price tag when they bring a game to like this to Switch. But what do you guys think? Do you think Nintendo has put down their stake that Switch will have these kind of Breath of the Wild style 3D games, or do you think they will truly merge the 3DS franchise into it and we'll get some 2D games?
I think we'll get both.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I was thumbing through it here. We don't have the numbers for it, but I know that Link Between Worlds sold very well. It's yep. it's one of the better one of the best selling games on 3DS. And they did bundles, they did price drops. It's part
yeah,
of their
it's
like
only $20.
Yeah, it's part of their whole like selects line or whatever it's called, they're calling it these days. And that game was wonderful. So I think there's still opportunity for that. You know, in the same way we got Mario Maker after 3D World and you know Galaxies and all that kind of stuff. I think there's still room for it, and I think it's a nice way to hold people over into the next big 3D one.
I don't know. Like, I kind of have a tendency to disagree. I don't know that we'll see another 2D Zelda game. I think now that the Switch is sort of the primary focus or probably will be in the coming year, I feel like it Nintendo might be hard pressed to divvy up those teams to create different types of Zelda adventures, you know? But then again, we also got a 2D Metroid last year, so.
I actually think you're guaranteed one because of the online plan. I think Four Swords. No, I like thinking about it, right? Like if they are releasing a monthly online focused game as part of Nintendo Switch Online, Four Swords.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, that'd be pretty good.
That'd be pretty easy to port over.
All right,
from,
I'm gonna walk that back.
Yeah, and from the GameCube. No, like I was thinking about it too. Like maybe it is the end of kind of like the 3DS era, like 2D Zelda games. But like Four Swords came out on a console before. It was kind of hard to play at first, right? Remember the GBA hookups and all of that. But that'd be a really good online multiplayer game, especially if you can finally chat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know you are the foremost expert on the Legend of Zelda franchise in the building.
Played everyone. Yep.
Hell yeah!
Just kidding.
Love that.
Tell the people how many. Zach knows. Zach knows.
To my chagrin,
I have not really played a Zelda game.
Wow,
that's true.
That's bold of you to come on the show on your first episode and be like, "Yeah, what's up?"
Hey, Nintendo fans,
I'm just
didn't
like
grow up with a Nintendo console. I grew up with a Sega Genesis.
Did you play Breath of the Wild?
I did play a bit of Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
Yep.
So, has like the franchise interest you? As somebody like from the outside looking in, like, do you have plans to go back to them ever?
I mean, I think Majora's Mask is a really fascinating game, and I would love to sit through and play that start to finish. But I don't know. Like, I don't have that connection to it.
Yeah.
And it's really fun being in an office full of people who love Zelda because I just don't have that. But it's really fun to see people, like, you know, like everybody geeking out about Breath of the Wild last year was great.
Yep.
And I definitely want to get back to it. Open world games, lately, I don't have the patience for them, and I think that's kind of what...
This is the exception in the series, right?
Right.
The other titles are either much more story focused or much more kind of like linear. They still have open worlds, but much more linear in their storytelling.
I mean, that's not Breath of the Wild does its open world like fantastically.
Right.
I just need to, you know, sit down and actually have a spare 200 hours to sink into it, which I don't.
I'm not sure like what should be your first. It'd be cool to do a video series on that, or like your first outside of Breath of the Wild. Because like I really love Link's Awakening because it's got an open feel to it, but it's sort of it is much more intimate. But also Link to the Past does the same thing.
Yeah,
I
feel like we're getting away from the original question, but yeah, I also vote
for
Link to the Past.
Sorry, Monty.
Not your fault. Like this is how this show goes. But I think Link to the Past is the right one.
Well, I mean, the other option is like if Nintendo goes back to the BS Zelda days. If you don't know what that is,
no Zelda games are BS. You take that back.
BS Wanda in Gamma Japan stood for broadcast satellite, and Nintendo had a service called the Satellaview where they would deliver content to the Super NES. Yes, over the airwaves, over satellite.
We did a Let's Play of it here last year. Yeah.
With Frank Cifaldi.
And so what they did is they actually had a narrator while you're playing it, and they would do these events where like everybody had 30 minutes to do something in the game. So they could be bringing back that 2D Zelda stuff. That'd be so cool.
So like this franchise has always existed as 2D and 3D in synchronicity.
Yeah.
And I don't ever really see that going away, honestly. Like I think there will always be room for both, because the thing is like people like, you know, at a certain age have a nostalgia for the 2D version of the game in the same way that people have nostalgia for 3D versions.
Especially if Breath of the Wild 2, whatever it's called, follows that open world kind of setup where it's more kind of exploration over story and item development or whatever, item gates. Then actually there is a lot of room for a 2D game, like more in the traditional vein. I think that'd be really cool.
16-bit games are selling on Switch right now. Like people
look at Blossom Tales, games that are like Zelda.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people are starved for something like that. So I think there's room for it.
Awesome. Well, you know, I think that does it for this week's NVC. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Can we get out of here? So much news. Let's hope that next week will actually let us catch our breath a little bit, because I'm completely behind on even finishing Celeste. And I want to get to playing some of these other games. Definitely going to get Night in the Woods and play that as well.
One last thing about Night in the Woods. Mm-hmm. I feel like I should have prefaced everything I said with the fact that it is a genuinely funny game.
Okay. Oh,
I thought you were going to say spoiler alert. No.
So, no. Yeah. You're not going to go in, you will probably cry, but you will laugh a lot too.
Good.
So, please,
that's awesome.
Please play Night in the Woods.
Chloe, when you're not on NVC, mm-hmm. where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, @_Chloe. That's Chloe.
And if you want any advice on indie games, she also pens a monthly feature on kind of games you miss.
Yeah. Yep. For that. First one of the year went up yesterday.
Nice. Oh, awesome.
Where can people find Brian Altano?
At Agent Bizzle. You can also find me on Podcast Beyond, Up at Noon, a bunch of other stuff. I'm on the shows.
Yep.
And I'm at ZachariasD on Twitter, and I'm here on NVC just about every week.
And I'm Per IGN on Twitter, and next week we'll have Philip Musen back. You may have seen him on the show a couple of times. Do we have a picture of him? Do we have a picture of Philip Musen, just in case people don't know who that is?
Hmm. Every time you ask, it's like a full 40 seconds, and then we get
there. There he is. Very good.
Right in the
motorcycle. So come back next week for many more topics on Nintendo, everything you love, and the wonderful Philip Musen. See you then. Goodbye.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.